by one of the directors on the Rancho Murrieta Community Services District Board of Directors. I will be serving as your facilitator tonight. I'm proud and pleased to be here to do that. We have a brief agenda, introductions. There are a few folks that I would like to introduce to you who are in attendance tonight. First, Linda Butler. Linda, would you mind standing up, please? Linda is also serves on the CSD Board of Directors with me. I don't see any other directors in the room. Did I miss anybody else from CSD directors? Who?
Martin
Cole. Marty, are you in the room? Martin Cole also serves on the Board of Directors. Thank you. Randy or Tim, either of them here? No. Okay, thank you. My far left, I'd like to introduce Melinda Morris. Mimi is our recently appointed general manager and is doing a great job cleaning up some stuff that we got behind on, and daunting challenge. She and the staff are working around the clock, it seems, to help us get things into better shape. Michael Fritchie, to my left here, is our director of operations. Travis Bohannon is our chief of plant. Somewhere in the room is Andrew Ramos, who serves as our chief counsel. Andrew's over on the far left. We also have Lisa Meadows, who is sitting in the left on the panel today. Lisa is co-owner and principal engineer for Meadows Water Management, one of the consultants that CSD Board hired to produce this integrated water master plan. Sitting next to Lisa is Dan Scalis, who's principal and project manager, also a consultant hired by the board to put this IWMP together for us. I did see coming into the room earlier Scott Adams. Scott, where are you? Scott is the chairman of the RMA Board of Directors. Thank you, sir, for being here tonight. And I spoke earlier and saw Randy Folt. Randy, where are you? Randy is the general manager here of the Country Club and his staff, and he helped us get this room prepared for us tonight. So how about a round of applause for all those who are here in attendance? Thank you. Those of you that have copies, whether it's scanned or in your hands, I'm going to turn the program essentially over to the project team, which includes Mr. Fritchie and our two consultant representatives. They have a presentation to share with you. I'm hoping that, I would love if all of you had reviewed the documents that we have on the website. We have what's called a story map. The first two of three phases for this project have been posted. The first phase covers the supply of water available to us here in Rancho Murrieta. That's been on, actually, the website for a while. The second phase addresses the demand currently and projected for the future. That's been up on the website now for a week or so. The third phase, which will be discussing alternatives and where do we go from here, will follow in short order, and we will follow up with another in our series of town hall meetings once that's completed. This is the second of our series. We held one in March. It was well attended as well, and I want to thank you all for joining us tonight. There are also on the website are a list of frequently asked questions. There is a list of questions that were collected at the conclusion, during at the conclusion of the March town hall meeting. And those FAQs are now on the website available for your review. And also there are a series of questions that have come in advance of tonight's meeting, which were posted earlier this week. So a lot of resources there. Those documents actually make reference to reference documents, historical documents. There's a lot of information there. Much more than we can provide in a brief meeting in one night. So we're going to have kind of an executive summary tonight, and then we'll go from there. When the presentation is complete, we will be taking comment and questions from the audience, and I'll take back the chair at that point. But now, Michael, are you going to kick us off?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good evening, everybody. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for coming, and I appreciate being here, and I'm hoping that both you will learn something and we will learn something in this process. Can you hear me?
No.
How's that? Is that too loud? Okay. So thank you, Stephen, for giving a brief synopsis of the first two phases of this project. I'm going to just go over some of the local laws that we have to do. And first laws are our local law, our district water code, and our recycled water code. These are updated by district ordinances that's passed by our CSD board, and they govern the way that we supply water to you, how you connect, and how you're billed, and how that's conducted. The second local is the county. The county, as you know, has landscape ordinances. They govern stormwater, and they also govern building codes that affect you. On the state side, we have the State Water Resources Control Board. That governs our water rights, permits, and licenses using the beneficial use doctrine. There's also SB 552, which is the Small System Water Shortage Contingency Planning. SB 221/610 is the water supply assessment required for developments over 500 units. Title 22 governs recycled water use and code, and we have a permit with the Title 22 to apply recycled water at the golf course and potentially other outside irrigation areas. There's also the 2018 Groundwater Sustainability Act. This requires local agencies to form a groundwater sustainability agencies, or GSA. Then we have our future, which is the Urban Water Management Planning Act. On the federal end, we have the Safe Water Drinking Act requirements. It's basically a pass-through to the California Division of Drinking Water, or DDW. They hold the permit for our water treatment plant. We have the EPA that oversees water quality, and in our MS4 NPDES general permit for our stormwater. MS4 stands for Municipal Separate Storm Sewer System. We also have the Army Corps of Engineers anytime any construction has to occur inside water in the United States. Next slide. Okay. When we hit the 3,000 plus connection, currently we have about 22 accounts as of October. It's estimated that the district will be defined as an urban water supplier under the water code as soon as 2025. For systems larger than 3,000 connections, we are subject to the Urban Water Management Planning Act. SB 606 and AB 1668, Conservation as California Way of Life Laws, calculates a system urban water use objective. We also have a water shortage contingency planning requirement. We'll also be under SB 555, which is validated water system loss reporting, which requires us to do an audit for any water that is lost in the system. So, talking about the story maps, the story map is a dynamic online web page, and it's a way for us to relay this project information directly to the public, and it was designed to be updated as we get additional information. We can update those story maps, and those story maps should have links that will take you to the source documents for the information that you need. It's also GIS based as the foundation, and like Mr. Booth said, we started out with the supply story map. We talked about our current water supplies, where we are, and then we're moving on. And this next section is the what was just completed is the water demands section. So we're taking a look at our current water demands, And we're looking at projected future demands with the information that's available currently to us. So if you can go on our website, and you can access this. It's a little hard to see, but if you scroll down once you get to our homepage, there's an integrated water master plan icon. You click on that, and that'll take you to all the information. The presentation tonight, March's presentation, it'll get you to both story maps and a lot of Q&A that we've just recently posted.
Michael, excuse me. I know this meeting is being recorded tonight. Will this recording also be available on the website in the future?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, we're recording this on OWL. So it'll be a video and audio recording. So once again, we're going to be going over primarily tonight our demands portion of this project, our supply and demand story map. And this will illustrate the existing and projected water demands. So I'm going to turn it over to our consultants. Dan, are you next?
That's Michael. So my name is Dan Scalis. I work for Atkins Engineering and Surveying. Our company has been doing engineering for a little over 40 years, a lot of water and wastewater infrastructure and planning as well. Just to reiterate kind of the consultant roles, since some people may be coming a little late to the process or haven't heard. So Manalis Water Management and Atkins Engineering have teamed up to write the plan, do the analysis. Manalis is going to do kind of the first part of it, supply, demand, look at the water balance, and then out of that we'll feed into the modeling that I will do, hydraulic modeling, but I also do some modeling as well. And then for my modeling, we'll actually be able to look at what infrastructure improvements need to be kind of done in the future. And we'll go into that in a little more detail.
Hold the mic in front of you.
Gotcha. Okay. So drilling down a little bit further, you'll hear what we call water balance. And you'll hear that kind of throughout our work and our presentation. And that's just looking at kind of a checking account or a bank account. You know, how much water do we put into it and how much water do we take out of it? That's in a nutshell what LEES is doing. So then we look at, do we have a deficit? Do we have enough margins in our water balance or our checking account, right? So our supply is how much money goes in. And that's something we've already done. We've looked at that. The supply story maps up. That information is there. And then right now, we're wrapping up the demands part of it. So how much water are we taking out of our checking account? How much water are we taking out of our bank account? In the supply part and the demand part, we've done a pretty deep dive into water rights. That's something that we've done since the last town hall meeting with consultation with the district's water rights consultant, examiner. He's been a big help for us. It's been enlightening for the process. And there's a really great memo that's on the district website that kind of explains some details that are pretty important to the process. So again, we're at the demands part right now, wrapping it up. We're looking, Lisa's going to go in a little more detail about this, but we've dug into the demands by how much the billing data, so actual water usage, has been provided by the CSD, and dug down even deeper into by lot type as well in the billing data, and then that's existing and past data. So we are also digging into and developing projected future use. Again, Lisa's going to go into a little more detail about this, but we've dug into that based on actual lots that were provided to us. So we actually got the plans from the developers and categorized each and every single lot. So dug down pretty deep into how this water is going to be used, larger lots or smaller lots. Larger lots with irrigation, that's a big use. So we were able to kind of tease that out. Lisa's going to go into more detail about that. So from the supply, the demand, again, that's our water balance, our checking account. At the end there, we're going to see, okay, again, repetitive, but how much deficit do we have? Hopefully no deficit, but how much margins do we have? How much more do we need? And that's going to play into kind of developing the shared vision model. Again, Lisa will go into more detail, but the shared vision model really looks at that supply and demand. Okay, so how much water, do we have, how much water we use, and then modeling that, and then getting input from the community, the CSD, on how do we adjust those model inputs, right? So there's some adjustments that need to be made there, and it's really good to get the community's input, right? So we don't do this in a black box. It's really good to get the CSD input so that we're kind of all on the same page at the end. So there's, again, two models. So shared vision model is what I kind of just described, and again, these will go a little more detail, but it's that supply and demand water balance on a monthly and an annual basis, so big volumes of water. How much do we have? How much are we using? The second model is the hydraulic model, which is a little more detailed, a little more refined, and that's on your actual water system. So everything from the pumps that come out of the river to the water treatment plant, to the reservoirs, the water tanks, actual distribution pipe. And we are right at the point where we've finished developing our existing model. So we're done at that point right now. And so we can actually see how the system functions. We calibrate that with fire flows to see does it actually match actual data that the CSD has produced and given to us, kind of see where it's at. And then, I'm going to go into a little more detail on the hydraulic model a little bit later. To add on the shared vision model with that kind of the community input and the CSD input, we really look at those what ifs, which are those little model calibration items. So what happens if we're in a really bad drought scenario? What happens if we're in back-to-back drought scenarios, right? So those are the what if questions, and that we're going to be looking from the community and from the CSD, how to do those, because that's the really like, how does it affect us, we want to know. So again, Lisa's going to go into a little more detail. On the hydraulic model, again, it digs in really deep, all the way down to the minute for water data. Travis, so graciously help us with that. But we actually have data down to the minute from the water treatment plant. So we look at the pumps, the flow from the pumps, and the reservoir levels down to the minute. And that helps us develop some curves and calibrate our models, so it gets pretty accurate. Again, so this is just reiterating, work closely with the CSD staff and gathering that, both the billing data, for usage and the water treatment data from the water treatment plants, how much demand, how much water we've actually treated and supplied to the system. So I'm going to hand it over to Lisa. She's going to go into a little more detail on demands.
Thank you. Don't pull a Jennifer Lawrence at the Oscars, right? Don't trip over the stairs on the way in. Can you hear me okay? In the back, how are we doing? Louder, louder, better. Okay, turn me up. Turn up the volume. All right. That's okay, too much. How's that? Better? Okay. Everyone can hear me. So I am Lisa Madouse with Madouse Water Management, and we're teamed up with Dan's team. We are engineers by training. We started actually in 1995 with my father was an engineer. My sister and I incorporated the business 10 years ago. My father's been retired for more than a half dozen years now, and we focus internationally, nationally, obviously locally here. I live in the Sacramento region. On water demand forecasting, conservation, a lot of modeling and analysis. We design a lot of water conservation programs. We work all over. We don't do the hydraulic modeling, the detailed modeling that Dan's team does. That's why we're paired up together. We do kind of more the higher level integrated planning analysis. We're following the shared vision planning. It's an Army Corps of Engineers process. We've been using it for over 20 years. It's written up on the demand story, actually on the supply story map, if you want to learn more about the approach we're kind of using in the shared vision modeling process. But it is based on your CSD data, and it's very custom exactly to your system. We went over with the water rights examiner. They examined our process and our water rights and operation permit water balance pieces of the model with us. I'm going to talk today about the demand. So like Dan was saying, there is the supply side, or the like household income side of the inventory that we do, and I'm going to talk today and focus in today's diving in is on the water demands, like your just like your household expenses, right? You've got all kinds of fixed expenses, and then you have projected expenses. In my case, we're saving for a lot of college right now in our household. So where I'm going to touch on where have we been. I'm going to look at your historical demands from all the existing connections and history that we have going back to 1994 on your billing system. Where are we today? So that's the snapshot of right now and your current water use with the community. We're going to look at what does the road look like ahead and talk about the development maps that the district provided us. And we looked at very detailed at the lot parcel level. That's a lot more involved than we have the opportunity to do for a lot of communities. So I'm excited to show you the detail that we have available for this analysis. I can speak long, if you want, on conservation opportunities and things, but we, bit of a heads up that we didn't take any discounts off of the water demand forecast for conservation. So we'll talk about that when we get into it a little bit, but we essentially, we made adjustments, but we made it conservative adjustments up in terms of the demand forecast, not down. So where have we been? Your water use actually has, historic trends has not been up, it's been down in your community. And I'm going to describe a little about why and kind of where we've been. So I know this is small for many of you. I'm sure, like almost the first row, you probably can't read those bottom numbers. But these are actually rainfall. So our supplies, right, hinge on specifically our weather, our climate, right? Wet years, we do well. We have a lot of river flow going by, easy for us to pump into your storage reservoirs. In drier years, you have more water stress. In all the years that you've seen, you've been able to have pumping into your reservoir storage. The average is 22 inches here based on CSD records that we have going back to 1991. The shaded areas, this is the 07-09 drought. Reminder, there's a QR code on the wall if you really want these on your phone or like zoom in, or hopefully you have a handout. This is the recession, which you'll see in a minute, had an impact. There's a lot of foreclosures, right? Some counts went inactive, so those aren't using water. There is the drought from 13 to 16, and then we had COVID and dry years that also impacted us. Your community, these are the number of accounts. So you've gone from 1,651 is the number of accounts in the billing system that we verified in 1994. Going up to today, which is 2,700 and change. So you've grown a little over 1,100 accounts over the past three decades. Water use does not follow that same trend. It's kind of all over the place, right? It went up, and this water use as a community is relatively high for this region. Statewide, you have a lot of outdoor irrigated and landscaping. It hit a peak of, and this is straight out of meter data. So this is all the meter data compiled that your basically the checking account for the CSD. This is a 1,838 acre feet. That's your max. You had 1,100 and change in the bottom of the recent drought in this is 2015. You may remember the news stories about that, the lack of snowpack and whatnot. So we have seen downward trends. You often see it go down. We see the max peak oftentimes right at the peak of a drought because people are dry, they're irrigating more and things, but they have not triggered so much conservation or drought risk mitigation in response. So then we see it go down and then people relax and rebound, in this case, or repopulate after the foreclosures and there's more occupancy. We'll see demand go back up. So that's very common. Drought down, rebound up. Economy down, rebound up. Same thing, COVID up. This is 2020 here. You had a bump with all the remote work, we assume, people staying home, flushing more toilets at home, and just spending more cooking and more home use. So on average, about here is about 1,500 acre feet per year. And an acre foot is essentially, you can think of a pool about the size of a football field, filled up 1 foot deep. That's about what an acre foot in terms of volume of water is. There are a lot of metrics out there. I'm going to give you one more that the state uses, and they require all systems over 3,000 connections or 3,000 acre feet served to report every month. And that's called on gallons per person or per capita per day. We calculated this actually back in 2010, and the district adopted a policy to voluntarily comply with state law at that time. It was called SBX 7-7, so it's Senate Bill 7X7. So all the large utilities had calculated a target, and that's what this pink line is. And the district did that too, to verify and prove up that you were using your water wisely. They wanted to show, and they knew that the water was high. And so we did these calculations, kind of here the historical. In 2010, you put forth a policy that you would strive for lowering that demand, and you can see you pretty much met it here. You actually were below it in the drought, rebounded, and then kind of evened out right around that 238 gallons per capita day is what your actual calculation is. You're running about 240 right now. The yellow line on the bottom, and this is described on a demand story map in detail, is what's called the residential gallons per capita per day. You've been running about 150, the statewide average is 86. So you should know you're pretty high here in the Sacramento region in the view of the state. And the gallons per capita per day in general has been about 150. You're running, still 240. So statewide picture, you're running pretty high. You perceived as using a lot of water. We're also a warmer climate here. Just want you to keep that in perspective, and that good job as a community, you made your goal. So take that away too. Okay, where are we today? Here is a window into your profile of water use. We do this, and I advocate that actually you have it on your website now, your demand story, but many ask for this to know who's using how much of the water. We have actual water volumes. You can see there's the estate lots, about a third, smaller estate lots. We broke everything down. We're able to do that because your billing system's broken down that way. So we're able to classify things by lot type. You have smaller lot type, circle, cottage. These are probably sounding familiar, different lot types. On the whole, you have 82% that are our residential use. And you have about 13% that goes to businesses, or what we call non-residential uses, about 5% to park and other uses like CSD and municipal uses. This is a quick, five-step view of what we do with the demand data once we analyze the historic data and your existing data for today. We collect that billing data by lot type. We verify the number of accounts, and we have the CSD look up solid waste and other accounts to make sure we have like kind of a full data set. Then we analyze the historic trends like you saw, and then we come up with, if we think there's been unique events like droughts that are pushing the demand down, or COVID that bumped it up, and we looked at kind of come up with reasonable and validated demand factors. Those are like gallons per drought per day per use for every lot type. So that's like fundamentally what's behind the analysis. I know in the town hall on March 18th, there was a question, are you going to use billing data? So we did, and we are, and that's what I can show you. I can show you details later if you want to see by lot type. This is also a small chart for you, but hopefully you have the handout. I'm going to describe what we have you're seeing here, which is the percent of the billing accounts in 2022. You would expect half the accounts to use that blue line as half the water, right? Half the accounts, you'd think, use half the water. It's actually not the case in your community, and I'll say actually many communities, so that's why we do this chart. You have about 75% of the accounts actually cross the line at 50% of the water. So 3/4 of your accounts use half the water. Right here is at 90% of the accounts, that's actually 27%. So more than a quarter, almost a third of the water is going to the largest accounts and those large users. So that's actually pretty top heavy. So, but we use averages, which is a conservative estimate. When you use averages and you assume 50% of the water use for the accounts, you can see we're actually taking quite a bit of water and basically averaging it out. It becomes a conservative assumption, right? Okay. So this is on the demand story map in detail, but we wanted to show you, here's the count of a number of accounts by lot types broken down by different definitions of lots and also non-commercial uses, along with their rolled up water demands, along with adding in pressure to the system. You have system losses, so all systems are under pressure, they all leak. You actually want that because you don't want bad water seeping in the pipes, right? They push the water out, so they leak, so we account for that in our budgets. So we have about 1,716 acre feet per year. That's kind of our base amount of water that the community is using today. And there's a lot more details on the demand story map. Okay, we're going to switch gears and go take a look at the road ahead. And what we did for the demand analysis, and I'm just going to give you an overview. Like we said, it's kind of an executive summary, but I'm happy to go into more detail. We can. We took, and this is an image on the left of an engineering drawing, which is done in CAD software. That software that Dan's firm has and uses regularly on a daily basis. They took that map and they converted it into this type of map, which is a graphic information GIS system map, which is software we use on a daily basis, and we collaborated on that. What you're seeing over here is a detailed lot map, and I don't know if you can see the little black lines, but it's at the parcel level, and each parcel is a different size, so there's kind of bigger parcels up here and smaller parcels down here and even smaller over here. And we organize them, and we have sizes, square feet of the parcel size, and based on your billing data and the size of those lots we know, and the size of the new lots, we did a cross comparison, and we basically took a comparison and applied what we call as a demand factor and an allocation of water for each lot type by each lot size. It's fundamentally what we did. So in words, we took the land use projection, which is a parcel map that you saw in detail. We added water on top of that based on size and really the indoor compared to, we broke it into indoor and outdoor uses to give an even more detailed look. And we made some adjustments. I'm going to talk about those adjustments in the next slide, but essentially things like climate change, we assume outdoor water use is going to go up, because the temperature is going up, so that your landscape of water demands will go up. We included accessory dwelling units, which are like garage conversions, granny lots, we have assumption about that. And in the end, we come up with total water demand. So that is for the whole community. You're not separating it by potable or recycled at this point. This is just all the expenses. So we did the full inventory of supply. We've got now the full inventory of vans. We did make some adjustments. We took a conservative approach. We're like, we do have embedded in it the weather effect in your historical demands. You saw that we took a drought rebound. We're not assuming the bottom, right? We're not assuming that how you use water in a drought is how you use water all the time. So we took into account the work from home shift by including 2020. We're basically averaging 2020, 2021, and 2022 water use. Those accessory dwelling units are now allowed under state law. We assumed, and I'd love community input on this too, if 1 in 10 like homes, this is kind of a lot. We work in areas like Santa Monica and then the coastal areas and whatnot. It's state law now that these accessory dwelling units are allowed. We'll often use 2.5, even 5% in really popular communities where they have really good building permit data and information on what ADUs are coming or being capable. And so it's often 2.5 or 5%. We use actually 10, so we feel that's conservative. We use 10% higher outdoor irrigation to account for, we know temperatures are rising. They have risen recently, and so that's the recent temperature increase is embedded, right? We're adding on another 10%. And then we didn't give any discounts or adjustments down for future conservation, but we know higher efficiency fixtures are still coming. A lot's already been retrofitted in your community based on building age and kind of expectations of useful life of fixtures. So we didn't do any downward adjustments. We didn't decide, oh, you know what? We eat out a lot for meals. Let's save on that part. We didn't take anything out of the budget for conservation, just like you might choose to think you would do that in your household budget. We didn't do that for this type of budget at all. And that's actually uncommon. We are frequently asked to conserve water because that water has a value to the community. Often, right, the value of the water that you paid to produce it. So for many communities, we're showing robust demand forecasts with a lot of conservation program scenarios in it. In this case, we're conservatively not doing that. And then we also took a look at the detailed 12 parcels that were zoned for non-residential. 8 of them have pretty good site plans, and 4 of them were kind of, you know, the best and conservative estimates on what they might be for those 4 other parcels on the non-residential side. Do you want to acknowledge that you do have a very active conservation program and that you also have a recycled water program so that, you know, we can discuss that during the scenario-based planning? You know, should we take some out for conservation? Maybe you disagree with us on that. Or, you know, how much recycled water is really on the table? Those are things we'll talk about in the next phase of the project. So the total water demands, kind of the summary of putting the two together is about 1,716, round to about 1,700, and then right now our estimate is 1,574 for the future demands, adding in the new projected development, the best we know. So this is based on the known values, and right now we're doing the calibration, like Dan said, and kind of refining our modeling and looking at future water use, and we do expect to talk about it a lot more in the next phase of the project, kind of how you're gonna add up and see the ability to reliably meet 3,290 or 3,300 acre feet per year. So I did. I mentioned we are refining the demand outlook. The forecast, the CSD is still. They gave us all the best data available. They're still, you know, asking questions. We did base it on this new normal. Recent years, we're in the process of doing a really careful accounting of potable and non-potable demands for a modeling effort. And we'll keep sharing more info as available on the shared planning. I know many of you want to know. Well, what's the bottom line? Like, you know, who supplies meet demand, and that's there's a lot of conditions, and we don't just look at one snapshot, like the normal year. We look at drought years and under a lot of conditions, and that's where the what if is. Well, what if that happened, and what if does happen? And so that's how we kind of what we call do a sensitivity analysis, where we check, because in the end of the day, you need a reliable system so that can serve water to your whole community. So that's our role in this, is to come up with shared vision and run a lot of what is kind of tests against the system. Okay, with that, I'm going to transfer it back to Dan's going to talk a little bit about the capital planning phase too.
Okay, so coming back to kind of the modeling that my team is working on, that Atkins is working on, we're gathering those inputs that Lisa's team has put together, that water balance. Those demands feed into our actual hydraulic model. And so then we bring that down to, again, a minute, an hourly, and a daily basis. We're really concerned with the daily basis. Okay, what happens on an average day? What actually happens to your system? How much do the pumps pump? What's the water level doing in the tanks? What's the water doing in the system? So then we can tease out if there's any deficiencies in the pipes. Fire flows is one that actually one of the key components that we look at. So we look at the average day, what happens on an hourly, a minute time when you guys use water. And then we put the fire flow conditions in there. So what happens at certain hydrants when we get a fire flow expectation. Because that's our worst case scenario when we're talking about actual infrastructure with pipes and tanks and pumps. So that's where we're at right now. We produced that existing model. And then we're going to start looking at the future model. What can we expect at build out? And that's, again, kind of where Lisa's at. We're finishing that up, getting that information in. And then, again, we can look at those deficiencies. Okay, for future, what do our pipes need to look at? Do we need more tanks, more storage? And that's really where the rubber meets the road at the end of the day, right? Because we put all this information together, and what does it mean? Well, do we need more infrastructure? How do we plan for that infrastructure? How do we size that infrastructure if it's needed? So at the end of the day, that's what we'll do. So last time, if you were here in March, the last town hall meeting, I had one of these images for a system that was very similar to yours. We hadn't had any of the data yet, but now we do have the data. And this is an actual loop of what it looks like on that daily basis. These little nodes are, you know, connections throughout the system. And then the color is how much pressure. There's just lumped pressures across the board, and how those pressures go up and down over a daily basis. So this is the existing one. And then this is the future one that we're looking at. Again, we're still working on this one. It's in progress. Tying them back together real quick with the future model. Lisa, again, our next step is to kind of build in these scenarios of, you know, what happens in a drought, what happens with back-to-back droughts, those kinds of things, and then how does that affect our infrastructure? So, again, the hydraulic model is showing mainly our pumps and our tanks and our pipes and the water treatment plant as well and the capacity there. But we're also going to look at, on a bigger scale, how much supply do we have? Or do we have enough supply? Do we have enough storage in the reservoirs as well? So that's another part of it that will come out. That's kind of the next steps. So again, the what ifs is how the community and the CSD is really going to help us out. It's kind of bringing forward those. Again, what happens in drought, what happens in back-to-back droughts. So I think I'm going to hand it back to Director Booth at this point.
Thank you. So we're at a point where on our agenda we'd like to invite public input and questions. Given the size of this group and the hour, I'm going to ask that if you have questions or comments, to try to keep them down to maybe 2 minutes. I'm going to ask that if you wish to address a question or a comment to the group, that you speak up to this lectern. There's a microphone sitting here. Please speak into the microphone. And my goal is to afford everybody an opportunity that has a question or a comment to be able to express those thoughts. Before we open it up to that directly, I will share with you that over the past week, I have received over 24 requests from community members to permit John Merchant to speak on their behalf in lieu of them taking time at the lectern. And so to kick off the public comment portion of the meeting, I'm going to ask Mr. Merchant to step forward, and I'm prepared to give Mr. Merchant 10 minutes or so, John. Again, because we had such a high volume of people that asked to let him speak on their behalf, and I know he's put a lot of work into preparing for tonight. And then we'll get to the end. You're a popular man, sir. And then after John has completed, anybody else who wishes to speak, if you would just line up down the center aisle, and we'll take you in order as you rise, okay? John?
Okay. Is that okay? Can you hear me? Okay. We'll start here. The heart of this community beats at 70 cubic feet per second. And what that means is, as long as the river for 6 out of 12 months in the year runs at 70 cubic feet a second, we have a right, a permit at this point, to divert that water off of the river. One of the things that I pointed out in the last letter that I wrote to the CSD was that since 2021, both from the State Resources Water Control Board and from the American River Basin Study, which was sponsored by the federal government, the Bureau of Reclamation, that there were some rather startling policy shifts and some rather startling statements as to where they foresee the rising temperature having an impact on the watershed of the Cosumnes River. I don't have much time. I'm gonna read you one of them, and it's just one sentence that basically says that historic data are no longer a reliable guide to future conditions. Why that's important is that through the history of the Integrated Water Master Plans and the studies that were done by Wagner here in 1990 and the 1977 study, okay, it was pretty much based on the fact that an interruption in the river, while we had had one in 77, 78, 79, was an extremely periodic event that probably could label as the 100-year. So what these folks are telling us at this point in time, like they told us in 1977, was that it might be 100 years and it might be tomorrow. Some of the things that concern me in the last plans and in the plans that we're looking at now is I don't see an emphasis on the risk that the folks that are already here are being asked to accept on the backs of building what will approach, at least from a planning standpoint, 4,000 units. I believe the number off the top of my head is 3,920. One of the things that every report we have done here in the past is that each report has recommended we develop an emergency source of supply. They have ranged in size from 300 acre feet to one of them, I believe, 600 acre feet. And my question as you look at what the planning number for this community is what's an acceptable emergency source of supply for what the total on this report says will be close to 9,700 people. So, as part of that, I have really no problem with the process that I'm seeing. What I'm trying to really ensure here that the data that gets plugged into the process is accurate. And one of the things that I believe Dan said that I have a lot of faith in, more than I have faith in the other numbers, is our production figures. The amount of water that we run through our water plants is measurable and is generally accurate, at least in my mind. I have a lot of trouble with other numbers, particularly billing numbers that are being used to evaluate use. That what you saw what Lisa put up there is gallons per capita per day. I've seen at least 10 annual reports from directors of operations at the CSD. Paul Stevenson did 10, and they're on the website if you ever want to look through them. What Paul would always say as a condition of his reports was that the numbers you see for production that come off of billing are, quote, what accounting told me. He never really had a lot of faith in those numbers. And in light of the fact that the numbers are tied to the billing system, which has had a terrible time in delivering us an accurate invoice, I really question those. So what I did to avoid a debate on what numbers we were using, I decided, well, if I learn how to use the Department of Water Resources database, which contains all the history for all the reporting that we have ever done through the years to the Water Board, I figured if we can't accept the reports we're sending to the Water Board, then maybe we ought to fix those, because if we're not doing accurate reports, then we're in violation of permit. So the result of that, and Lisa put the chart up there on demand, when I went in there and I looked at the number, originally on the one that was on the website, it didn't say that it was billing numbers she was accounting for as part of the water demand for what we were billed. The real number of what we use is a production number, because every drop of water we produce either goes into a tank, and we can hold 4 million gallons in our tanks, or it goes into the pipe under pressure, and it goes into your house and it's read by your meter. If it's not doing one of those things, it's leaking. So I went back just to be sure that I was right, because I wasn't sure what her number looked like, and I compared the numbers that are on the Water Board reports we send on an annual basis. And I compared those to the numbers that they're using, and there was a pretty severe disconnect in the numbers. So what I did was, okay, let's assume it's a billing number. So I want to make sure that what I'm looking at from a production standpoint is a total number, so I went through just to make sure, and it makes the numbers even worse. I mean, if you account for what we say at the Water Board, and you account for what Lisa puts on a report, in some cases there's only 3 or 6% of the total water that's unaccounted for. So that number doesn't make sense, and I think somebody needs to go back and make a correction to those, or at least validate that we're using accurate data. The other part of this that I thought was very striking to me was the fact that in her report, Lisa said that the average household in Rancho Murrieta, based on the 2020 U.S. Census, was 2.3 people in every household. Now, I went back into the revised census numbers, and that number had risen to somewhere between 2.45 and 2.47 So to make sure that I had an accurate number, believe it or not, I actually called the United States Census Bureau, and believe it or not, I actually got somebody who knew what they were talking about to talk to me. And basically, the adjustments, and you could say, well, you know, I can take households, and I can take water use, and I can divide these numbers, and I can really get a number that disagrees with what the census says. But there are so many things happening, for example, that they said to me, the minute you put a grandma or a grandpa living in the house with the kids, you increase the household size. We know from what's happening here demographically, if you went to the Little League parade, or you went to Halloween, okay, 2.3 is kind of looking a little low. So I went back in and I took the 2.45 number, and I multiplied it towards the planning, and that was the most startling number I think I've discovered in this whole process. It's probably got 200 hours in it, is that we're looking at a community, at build-out, a planning community. Now, we may not build as many houses, but we're required to plan for these in case we do. Okay, 9,750 people are in this report. Now, to give you a point of relevance, that makes us into a sister city of Capitola. Okay, and that makes us the 54th largest city in the state of California. Okay, so the relevance of some of this is important, and it's why I'm really having some problems with the data. So I'm sure other people have questions, and there are mega questions about storage. We had 4,750 acre feet of storage in a 2016 report we sent to the county. We don't have that much storage. And thanks to Dan and the bathymetric, took me a long time, analysis we did on the two lakes, I finally got an answer to something I asked 20 years ago. How do you know there's really that much water in these lakes? We haven't done one on Clementia. So let's move on, because I don't want to take too much time. The issue of Clementia is a permit issue. And we're not going to resolve it here. But there are some things that I think really need to be considered in the evaluation of where we stand with a water right. There's a lot of us that have been suspect of that water right for about the last 15 to 20 years, and I don't know why it's been a water right here that was revised in 1980 that we still don't understand. That's not our responsibility. That's their responsibility. There's a license on Clementia for diversion of water, and it's a diversion of drainage water. And you have a license that says that you can divert 1,000 acre feet, round numbers, of water off of the 1,100 acre watershed that's above Clementia, and you can put it in the lake. There's also another permit, which is our primary diversion permit, which is number 16762, which says we have a storage right in Clementia. And that storage right, and it was in the storyboard on the permit section, and I can give it to anybody that asks me. There's a caveat to our storage, and when you add the numbers up, okay, they very conveniently allow you to put water in Lake Clementia, but really, if you empty the big lakes, Calero, and you empty Chesboro, at some point when you go to take that full quantity of water, you have 2,750 acre feet of water that you're going to be allowed to divert in there, because they don't give you the full quantity of all three lakes as a diversion requirement. Now you get away with it until you start having enough houses that you drain Lake Calero, and you will. If you build this, you're going to drain Lake Calero. So that's a big issue. I had a meeting with the consultant, and I've had a meeting with some water lawyers, and they need to get a water lawyer. I'm not trusting what I'm hearing. There's a scenario we have put, just to give you an idea of how much river water.
John, you're at 13 minutes. If you could try to wrap that up, please.
I'm going to end it.
We'll let him finish, but he's...
Okay. We put, according to Lisa's charts, we put approximately 1,000 acre-feet of diverted water from the river in Lake Clementia in the last 10 years. Now, CSD is under the assumption that because they have put 100 acre-feet on average of water in Lake Clementia, they can start a water bank. So, basically, the idea would be, naturally, if you can get the water board to buy this, well, let's drain Lake Clementia, and we've had suggestions at improvements committee meetings that we just send it down to Bass Lake, or quite honestly, if you were to allow that water banking to continue, you could pump water from the river into a full reservoir, let it go over the spillway, and let it go back into the river. And I don't think the water board in today's world is going to buy that. The amount of water, I think, realistically, that comes out of that lake is gonna make us ask the question of whether we trade an extremely valuable community asset that allows human contact with the water for the amount of water that's in there. Maybe they don't have a choice, but I think somebody's going to take a realistic look at it. And the other suggestion that comes out of improvements committee meetings is, well, maybe we should just go down and change the permit. Well, there are about 450 permits waiting in line at the State Water Resources Control Board to be acted on, and the two permits that belong to us, which are down there for renewal, have not been touched in the last 3 years. So I don't think this is something that you're just going to write a letter and get no problem, just take all the water you need, it won't be a problem. The last thing I want to point out that concerns me is just staying with Clementia, and it's not the only part of this puzzle from an infrastructure standpoint. You're going to have to make infrastructure changes to move water that you put into Clementia up to Lake Calero so you can drop it down to Lake Chesbrough, so you can drop it down to the water plant, and so you can put it in your home. There's no piping. There's piping that goes from the river to Lake Clementia, but there's no piping that goes from Clementia to Calero, and there's no pumping system. And I'm not an engineer, but I know it's going to take something to get the water up there. In 2006, we requested an amendment to our permit. And to make sure that we got it, we told the water board, don't worry about water infrastructure as it relates to diversion, because we're already completed. So number one, I'm not sure we have a permit to do any of this infrastructure we want to do. And secondly, if you do, I guess the next question I'd like to ask, are we going to pay for it? And what else are we going to pay for? So that's... I'm sure you'll hear questions from some other folks into some other very, very key areas. I didn't want to monopolize the time, but I really wanted you to get an understanding from our perspective of why this is so critical and why we can have discussions about security and why we can have discussions about the country club and how they affect the value of our home. There is nothing, okay, that will affect the legacy you want to leave to your grandchildren, or if you're married with two kids and 34 years old and a 30-year mortgage, there's nothing we're doing that is going to impact this community more than what you're sitting here doing, and we had to fight to get this public outreach.
If you wish to pose a question to the panel or make a comment, please stand up. If you wish to have discussion with Mr. Merchant or others, please do so privately. Okay.
There's a bar for that.
Yeah.
Janice is next in line.
I think the lady right behind you actually is next. Thank you.
Many of you don't know who I am. I'm Carol Anderson Sullivan Ward. I've been here. My parents bought the first lot in Rancho Marietta in 74. And John Sullivan and I built our first house here in 78. We both raised our families here. I developed the equestrian center. We're made out to be rotten people because we're developing things. We are not. This community has my heart and soul and my pocketbook, and I have some great partners here. My concern is, a lot of these numbers you're listening to are not validated. They're biased. There's room here for more, and this was built to accommodate more people. Part of the problem we have here is we have a country club that's failing because the houses didn't get built to support it. We need more people in-house to support this community. And we stuck our necks out, and I promised Bel Air that if they would anchor our shopping center, then we would get 800 more rooftops built to support them. If those don't get built, they don't reach their numbers. And, you know, the next time we have a flooding and you can't get down the highway and you want to shop at Bel Air, it might not be here. So, you know, there's dry times, there's wet times, and we need the things that we're building here to make this community what it is. I built a hotel. I think a lot of you have been to the spa, you've had dinner at the gate, you've had guests that have come. You know, none of this is cheap, and really, up until now, none of this has cost you guys anything. I've done it because we love it, and I have great partners that help me. And John Sullivan was a huge part of this, and God bless his soul. Everything that he ever thought or learned was on these kind of pads. So I'm just bringing this here tonight because I'm honoring what he did for this community. We plan to build another 597 homes in this community. When we bought the land, we were supposed to be able to build 1,200. We did not think that was right for the community. We have less than half the numbers, but we need those to keep this community going. We've taken it in the shorts to make it right for the community, not necessarily for my partners. I need your help. We all need your help. We can conserve water. We drilled a well on my ranch property to be able to pull water if we need it. I mean, we are trying to do everything we can here to make this a success and make it the place that we love. Just because it's Halloween week, don't let this week where you're trying to put fear in the hearts of people sway you on some of these numbers. They're not true.
Carol, you're at 3 minutes. Thank you.
Well, I only get three, but thank you very much. And seriously, I really appreciate all your support. And we'll get through this together, okay? Thank you.
I agree that developers are not monsters, and I have never, ever tried to paint that in direction.
Well, would you mind stating your name?
Oh, I'm
sorry.
Please,
Janice.
Janice Eckerd.
Thank you.
Since 2006, I have been very outspoken about the CSD studies, and also mainly because of their overly aggressive assumptions and data inaccuracies. Here are just some of the examples. The Department of Public Health and a county-ordered peer review of the CSD studies both state that CSD's 50% drought conservation rate, which includes mandatory shutoff of all exterior water, is too aggressive and is, may not be achievable, and if it is not, will run the community out of water. That's not my words. That's the Department of Public Health. And a peer review done by, ordered $200,000 report done by the county. The Department of Public Health and Ken Giberson, who did the original studies for CSD, stated that it is not, it is absolutely not an acceptable practice to assume that lakes will be at their flash flood capacity when planning for future development, as these studies have done. CSD's 2020 study says that all developer homes, every single one, will use recycled water for their landscaping. The only problem with that, all of the CSD studies prior to that stated there was no supply, and there would not be supply for residential homes until there are at least 3,800 houses. That's CSD's own study. All CSD studies since 1990 have included Lake Clementia as part of Rancho's water supply. The Department of Public Health has stated that Rancho Murrieta cannot assume Clementia is part of the water supply because it isn't permitted for that usage. Sorry. It's not as long as it looks, I'm blind. In 1990, CSD stopped using the industry standard method of determining how many homes the water supply would support. What they do instead is assign a specific amount of water based on the lot type. And I think this is really a dangerous way of doing it because it allows them to manipulate the data. Let me give you an example. In CSD's story map, they calculate the water based on 2.36 people per household, as John Merchant mentioned. I actually pulled up a study from the U.S. Census Bureau. I have it right here. It's actually 2.8 people per household, and that means that almost a variance in the water just on that one calculational mode of almost 100 acre feet per year. So my question for Lisa is, are you going to take into consideration all of these comments that have been made by the different agencies and by the experts? Are you going to stay with the same assumptions, or are you going to modify them, and are you going to update the data to match the census?
Is that active question? Do you like me to respond?
Please, if you're able to do so, yes, please. If you're able to answer the question, yes, please.
Sure. So we are using the best available data. So the 2.36 people per household is applied to some of the smaller lots. If you look at the largest lot size, we actually apply 3.36. So we do an accounting for a presumed, and that's an assumption.
But the census says it's 2.48.
Well, if you do, actually our estimate is 9,694 people, so we're pretty close. We can update it to 2.48. That's a simple calculation to do. But we actually did it. We felt that the larger lots would likely have more water use. And so we applied the additional people in that respect, and we felt it was more appropriate to do that by lots.
Are you going to stay with the 50% usage reduction, including the mandatory shutoff of all exterior water?
That is actually a separate planning exercise. That is a water shortage contingency planning. That was actually a mischaracterization, I feel, in the applying that to the past study, because we only actually applied drought stages 1, 2, and 3 that gets down to 37%, not 50%. And at that time, as I showed you in the historic demand, the water use for the community was much higher. Now you have achieved a lot of conservation savings in the community, so no, we would be completely revisiting that.
So we've dropped to 20%, and then you're adding the 37%, so we're actually at 57%?
That's not correct.
Okay.
That's an incorrect assumption.
Yes. And those discussions will take place in the next phase, right?
That's correct.
As part of the alternatives that will be presented to the Board of Directors for consideration following more public input, right?
In the town hall, yes, exactly. We'll be talking through drought scenarios and reasonable assumptions on drought response. And
is it fair to say those conclusions have not been drawn yet?
Yes, and I don't agree with Janice's current thought, and happy to revisit it and talk through more. Yes.
Okay, can we pass the mic to the next person, please, Janice?
Could I just ask one quick question of Michael Frenchie?
Please.
Thank you. A couple months ago, Michael Frenchie and I attended a meeting where Michael said, "I wish I knew the exact number of EDUs the developers need, because I am going to give the developers they want for their, the water they want for their houses. When I expressed alarm, Michael said, I don't have a choice. The CSD signed a financial services agreement guaranteeing water for the developer homes. I warned Michael that I don't know how CSD could sign away our water rights and that it might be an illegal act to predetermine the outcome to the study, particularly since he has a fiduciary obligation to protect the existing residents' interests by not running us out of water. The CSD is spending hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Janice, you ask a question.
Okay. Based on your comments, how can the existing residents trust the viability of this study and also trust that you will protect the health, welfare, and property values?
Sir, relax, please.
Carol got kicked off.
Please. We're going to let Michael answer the question, please, and then I'm going to call upon you. But please, sir, please maintain some decorum. Don't exchange with the other audience members, please. Okay? Thank you. Michael?
I mean, the whole reason we're doing this integrated water master plan is to make sure that the existing residents have a good supply of water, a standard supply of water, any future obligations that the district has will be met. All ratepayers will be served. Your time's up.
Janice, we're not going to engage in a
debate.
Janice,
I'd be happy to meet with
you. Your point, Michael, I've got it. Your point has been made. There are contractual obligations under the financial services agreements to provide water to future development. That assessment is part of how our consultants are determining the projected future needs. And if those commitments are beyond our capacity, then we're going to have to discuss what alternatives are available to us to either meet those obligations or seek to modify them. Sir, did you wish to speak? Please state your name.
Thank you, David. Tom Direct. I'm a partner with Carol Ward in Rancho Murrieta Properties. I've been coming up here since 2010, spending quite a bit of time with John Sullivan, his daughter Erin, and the pleasure of being a partner with Carol Ward. Since I first came up here, the one thing that Carol and John emphasized to me, because I was out of town, I was a developer partner, came up riding my horses. They wanted this community to be the best. They wanted it to be built right, make sure that the residents had the services they need. The hotel and shopping center were one of the first things they wanted to do. We struggled to make it work because we didn't have the rooftops. I'm dragging on here, but I just want everybody to understand, this family and this investor group are local and are not going to do anything that they can't be proud of.
And in the context, if I may, in the context of evaluating our water needs, the development that this family and other developers have in mind, and the future expansion are all factors that go into it, and we know that there are multiple stakeholders, and we recognize that those folks have a stake and an interest, and so I thank you for your comments. Please be brief.
Okay,
we're here to talk about the water plan.
Here again with the water plan. Just to understand, we made a commitment and we funded one third of the water treatment plant expansion when we first bought the property so that we know we could have water and we could build houses. When we bought the land, we thought we could build 1,200 houses. We're now proposing less than 600 houses. So the build-out is less than all the previous studies, and that doesn't help our bottom line, but we knew what was right for the community. Thank you, Dave.
Steve, and thank you for that. And I know that our consultants specifically looked at that redesign, and their numbers reflect the modifications that have been made. Thank you for that comment. Does someone else wish to speak or pose a question? Please step up. And if others wish to speak, please just line up behind this lady.
My name is Lisa Smith, and I just want a clarification.
Because I read in the paper of the River Valley Times the other day that our only two lakes for drinking water was Calero and Chesbro. And the only thing that Clementia can be used for is recreation. Am I right? Am I wrong? Did I read something misprinted? I just want some clarification.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I mean, the essential answer is yes. As was explained during the presentation, there is in the permit, and I think Mr. Merchant addressed this, there's an ability, if water is pumped from the river into Lake Clementia, theoretically, that volume of water, this has been in our record for a while, that volume of water could then be transferred to the water treatment plant for use for household potable water. One of the challenges behind that, as was discussed earlier, is there's no infrastructure currently to get the water from Clementia into the treatment facility. Ma'am, did you wish to speak?
Maybe. I'm sorry, I'm Carol Prinzo, 2025. So Clementia is built by rain runoff. We don't really fill that lake with river water except to account for evaporation seepage. So if we're relying on runoff only to fill that reservoir and we're not using it as part of our water supply, what happens when in build out you have to divert all that runoff to prevent urban contaminants from entering the water supply? Things like pesticides, fertilizers, herbicides, and other stuff.
Is anybody on the panel prepared to answer that question?
I can thank speak you. To that. So actually, we do pump water into Clementia every year. It's not a whole lot, but we do pump some in. And I want to clarify one piece on the infrastructure that was brought up. We actually have very convenient infrastructure that I think it's a 30-inch line that goes from Granley's all the way to Calero. Well, there is a manhole with a lid that can be utilized to pump water from Clementia into Calero if we choose to. It's fairly convenient, a very small infrastructure investment. The issue that we have is that while one side of the State Water Source Control Board Hall says, yes, you can utilize this, anything that you pump into there for municipal use. The other side of the hall, the Division of Drinking Water, they're saying, well, maybe, maybe not. So we're taking a look at that right now. There's two agencies that have to be satisfied. One for the right, have that done. The other one is our water treatment plant in its current configuration able to satisfy DDW's requirements to actually utilize that water? And we're taking a look at that now.
In fact, we just hired a consultant to help us in that assessment.
That's correct. We have a meeting with them in mid-November.
Sir? My name is Greg Wheeler. I'm a geologist and have been since 1977 when I have a PhD. I'm going to read the question because if I extemporaneously tell you, it'll take a lot longer. In August of this year, Drew Lessard, he's the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation head of Folsom Reservoir, estimated that out of Folsom, 3 inches of water evaporated in August of this last year. He didn't separate seepage from evaporation, but just measured it and said about 3 inches. If that were to go for the whole year, which obviously it won't, because last August was a very dry time, that would amount to 6.5% of the reservoir. That's a Folsom. I didn't find any separate study that was done here. Now maybe there is one. But my question is, if we lose 4 or 5% a year to seepage engine evaporation, is that being taken into consideration, and at what risk are we putting the community if we didn't get water into the reservoir for a couple of years in a row, if we lost, say, 5% a year of that water. Is someone on the panel prepared to answer that question regarding evaporation?
Thank you, sir.
Yes.
All right, better. Thank you for bringing up that question. There is evaporation data from the Folsom Reservoir that we do use as a proxy for taking out of the supply available from your reservoirs. So the answer is yes, we account for it, and we're using similar data, that evaporation data that you get from Folsom.
Thank you. Ma'am.
Yes. Hello, my name is Marcia Reimers, and I would like to know, do you have a backup plan if we have another drought year like we did in 77-78, when we could not pump water from the river? No water was pumped from the river during those years or during that time because of the drought. You say you have a conservation plan, but isn't that putting the burden on the homeowners? And if you do have a plan for a backup plan, what is it?
Is it fair to say that that would be part of the third phase of the project, and we're not at that, or are you prepared to answer that question tonight?
I do, and I can. So we actually going to go forward one more slide. We use actual river hydrologic data, so we do simulate basically river flows, the ability to pump at Grandless, and this is the river hydrology you're talking about here. Your flows were low in 76-77. That is the worst case scenario we are watching for, absolutely. And in the 2010 plan, the outcome was we would feel more reliable if we had a backup supply. And in that case, it was decided, and we'll debate it this time, for investigating doing a groundwater well, sized at the public health and safety, you know, domestic indoor water use for all existing and future ratepayers, so that you would feel more reliable in your supply and had a backup. That's actually now in a recent law that was passed in 2021 that utilities need to have a backup supply in a situation like yours. So we'll definitely be talking about this in the next phase of the project, about what type of backup supply you want, what size, and what cost. Yep.
Thank you, Lisa.
One more question about Clementia. Since we're so reliant on rainfall to fill that body of water, we also use that body of water for firefighting, for large fires. For those of you who were here a few years back, there was a huge fire out just beyond the water treatment plant. Took out about 1,100 acres, and the helicopters were using the water out of Clementia. There's no water in Clementia because there's no runoff and the river isn't running and we can't pump. Where are we going to get water to fight firefighters? Fight wildfires, excuse me.
Is anybody on the panel prepared to answer that question? If not, we can write it down and we'll put it on the FAQs. Okay. Yeah.
So we did hear this question previously. So, and I actually, in some other communities, I've looked at drought fire reserve, actually in reservoirs and saving. The volumes we're talking about are pretty small. The number of bucket takes and the need for the Forest Service or what other CAL FIRE to fight those fires is a relatively small volume on scale of the size of your reservoirs. Another thing to consider is that what we have pumping and water doesn't take the water all the way down to the bottom. You will not see, like, you know, the muddy bottom at the bottom. We use what's called usable storage, so that's without the flashboards in, and then down to what we call, in engineering terms, dead pool, that more water we can't take out. If you saw Folsom and Last, they actually, you know, had a floating pump out by the front of the dam. I walked out there myself. So, I mean, there are ways to get a little more water out, but we are conservatively, yeah, there will be a pool of water that, you know, firefighting can still, and aerial firefighting can still support.
Thank you, Lisa.
In our estimation.
My name is John Van Dorn, and my question is for Mr. Frischi. Based on your conversation,
Mrs. Eckert, is it your position?
Can you hold the microphone in front of your mouth?
Yes. Do you want me to start again? Can everybody hear me?
Yeah, your question is for Mr. Fritchie.
Mr. Fritchie, is it your assertion that we are legally obligated to provide all the water to the developers for future development?
That's an answer I think I'd have legal provide to you.
Okay, well, toward that end, I sent Mr. Ramos an email. I'm going to read these because I don't want to misspeak. Mr. Ramos, my name is John Van Dorn. I'm a resident of Rancho Marietta, and I would like to meet with you regarding the Rancho Marietta Community Service District. I am, of course, willing to pay you for your time. Mr. Ramos responded, Mr. Van Dorn, thanks for your email. Could you please clarify your request and the topic you would like to discuss? I responded, dear Mr. Ramos, please provide your interpretation of the financial services agreement as it pertains to capacity. Does the financial services agreement state that we are guaranteeing water treatment capacity or that we are legally obligated to provide enough water for the future development as set forth in the application of Cosumnes Riverland LLC? The response I received was from Tim Mabee. Hello, Mr. Van Dorn. The Rancho Marietta Community Service District does not allow residents to direct access to legal counsel. The decisions for access to the district's legal counsel are determined by the general manager and or board of directors. You can understand all the cost factors, time constraints that these types of direct requests cause. Thank you for your time in this matter. Have a good day. Which I responded, dear Mr. Mabee, in the event that Attorney Ramos did not forward my first email to you, I offered to pay for his time. Now that Mr. Ramos is here.
No, so, man, I'm going to interject. I concur, it's the opinion of the board, that Mr. Ramos and his firm are counsel to the board. And we can ask for some sort of information on our FAQs about the FSAs and what our contractual / legal obligations are. But I think it's too complex to address tonight. I appreciate your question. It's a valid one, and we will get an answer posted.
So,
no.
Answer the question.
I'm not asking for attorney-client privilege to be broken. I'm not asking for work product to be designated as an objection. I'm asking for an answer to the question.
And I'm really not trying to be elusive or evasive. I will tell you that the board has had multiple hours-long discussions about the trappings of the FSAs. We will, in the very near future, seek to put something up in relation to the Integrated Water Master Plan that addresses what our legal obligations are with regard to the FSAs.
Mr. Ramos, since my question wasn't answered, please don't bill me .2 for this.
What I know about this is that we put up over $4 million towards the water treatment plant. And at the time, we were asking for 1,200 lots is what we were expecting. We're now asking for under 600. We have reduced that, and that price per lot has gone way up. So if there's anyone on the board that doesn't think we should be getting those services, then they need to let us know, because I'd like my money back.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, and again, I think it's fair to say that we are looking at projected development, and our consultants will be looking at that projected development to determine whether or not we have sufficient supply to meet that projected demand, and all of the stakeholders' interests will be taken into account. John, did you wish to speak again briefly?
Yeah, I have kind of a follow-up to the water treatment plan question. Just as a matter of fact, we also contributed $4 million to the reconditioning of WT1. In light of that, I'd like to ask you if there is consideration or costs associated with water treatment for redundancy. Right now we have two water plants, and in the summer, the $14 million water plant doesn't seem to like manganese so much. and the other plant, which is, you know, like 30 years old, it loves it and it fixes it. So we use plant two in summer because it's more reliable, even though it's worth about $12 million less. Do you have any plants that plant is going to require retrofit if we keep it? So I wonder if you have any plans to do that and what the cost would be. Secondly, just as a quick follow-up, nobody here has said that we are against development. First of all, the developer's application at the moment, and we have to treat it as that, has 800 units or 695 units down at the county on an application that's been down there since 2014 and revised three times. Okay, if they refine that, it gives these people the opportunity to clearly evaluate the number of houses that are going to be here. But if they don't, and we have asked them to, okay, then we have no choice. But, you know, we're not against rooftops, we're not against supermarkets, we're not against anything. Okay, well, we don't want to run out of water. It's simply that simple.
All right, John, may I ask you? Mr. Fritchie is, I think, going to address the question that you posed, John.
About the supermarkets?
No.
Yeah, so you're right. You're right, John. You're right. We do have what I would call a manganese issue that crops up during certain times of high demand. And my discussions with Travis here, who is a genius with his water plant, makes everybody give water. Let's all give Travis a big hand. So we discussed this manganese issue ad nauseum, and my next ask is going to be that the board approve a study so we can determine what needs to happen to the treatment plant to make sure we have the capacity that we think we have during those summer months. And actually, I'd also like to announce that we are going to be working with San Luis Obispo. We're going to be the senior student project for them solving that very same problem. So we're going to be able to get the students involved. We're going to be able to take all that good information and move it to whichever consultant gets the job. So we are definitely concerned about it, and we are taking a look at that.
Thank you, Michael. Sir?
Thank you. I'm Brad Simple, a resident of the South. I've got a couple of questions pertaining to the supply. And some of it's parameterization of your assumptions. You know, is it really appropriate to assume that the total water available includes the use of the flash floods and clemencia? And won't this provide too rosy a picture of the actual water that's available? And wouldn't it be more appropriate to assume the lowest reasonable and reliable number as opposed to a hypothetical value that is unreliable and requires the development of additional infrastructure to use?
So our what if planning tool does both. It takes out the flash floods like as the base condition, and then it adds them in to see if it makes a difference. So that's in our analysis. We looked under both conditions, with and without the flash floods. Our assumption, base assumption, and the conservative one would be is they're not used. So that's certainly on the table to talk about in the next phase.
And if I recall correctly, in the story map regarding supply, numbers of acre feet are addressed both with and without the flash floods for each of the three reservoirs.
That's right, on the story map.
Yeah. Thank you.
There's also on the demand story map discussion of the FSA in your earlier comment.
Well, I think it's important to highlight that because I think it's a misrepresentation to say, talk about the use of clemencia and the flash floods, because that's not in this presentation. The available water is described as with clemencia and with the flash floods. So your numbers are grossly overrepresenting what water is truly likely to be readily available.
So we, the supply storyboard, as I mentioned, is a complete inventory of everything on the menu, and then the same with the demands. It's an inventory, and then the scenario phase, we are taking things on and off the table. So things like the flashboards, that's where we test that discussion, and so it is. incumbent upon us to take a look at the volume with the flashboards and without the flashboards. So that's the analysis that we're running in a thorough engineering assessment. We'd be criticized if we left them out completely. So we're planning to look at both. And, you know, if the base assumption is that we don't use the flashboards, that would be a more reliable assumption, then that would be our planning for approach. Yeah. So is that
I would like to clarify.
Yeah. And the same in the 2010 plan we also looked at with and without Clementia, with and without flashboards. It's the same, you know, it's prudent for us to do an assessment where, you know, we look at the full menu of options you have as a community on the supply side, on the demand side, same.
But Lisa, is it fair to say that currently we rely upon Calero and Chesbro to supply our water, our potable water, and Clementia represents a body of water that may or may not be available in the event that it's needed, which would be one question, how much is there? And then secondly, what would it take to put it into the system? Is that part of what will be the future analysis?
Yes, and if and when it would be triggered, which you hope would be minimal to none. Yeah,
thank you.
That's
does that help, sir?
It does. I got a second question. And I understand that recycled water plays an important role in the water plan overall. And has CSD considered whether or how it may be impacted if the recycled water cannot be used to its fullest possible application because of the presence of PFAS in the recycled water?
Michael, are you prepared to answer that one for us?
I can talk a little bit about that.
Thank you.
So yeah, PFAS is an issue that a lot of municipalities deal with. Prior to coming here, I was a general manager for a sanitary district, and prior to that, I was an engineering consultant, designed water and wastewater treatment plants. Travis has done some testing recently, and we have found zero PFAS, so we're in our potable water, so we're very lucky. So if there's zero in the potable
water. Recycled water.
In the recycled water. Now let me tell you about recycled water. So recycled water, the permitting is pretty much the same for the most part in just about every state. And what the state's responsibility is to make sure that they allow something that's safe for the residents or the people that are nearby a recycled water application area. And what the state hangs their hat on is agronomic rate uptake. So they will, well, you can, I'm trying to answer your question. You can shake your head all you want, but I'm trying to help.
This is an emerging contaminant. It is not an agronomic issue. It is front of mind at EPA right now, and it is in our purple plate water.
If you say so.
All right, so Michael, let's post that as a question. We can do more research and find an answer to the question about that contaminant without getting sideshowed here. Hi. We're going to try to wrap. I see a lot of folks are heading home, so if you want to speak, please step up so we know how many more speakers we have. And we do want everybody a chance to ask their question. Please, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Cheryl McElhaney, and I'm the president of SOLOS, Saving Our Lakes and Open Spaces. Before I ask my question, I'd just like to kind of make a statement that some things never change. Since 2014, when we formed, the developers have been telling us how much they love this community and how much they have, you know, long-range plans for this community and how much they're going to do for this community. And they can't even stick around and watch the rest of the statements on this night. They say their piece and then they fold out. I'm sorry. They don't love this community. So,
do you have a question for the panel, Cheryl?
I need another hand. So my question is, you know, you're working on integrated water master plan. We have approximately 2,850 metered residential units. When we reach 3,000 metered residential units, we will become an urban water district. The two developments underway, Riverview on the south and the Retreats on the north, will put us over the 3,000 meter residential units. So why are you not working on an urban water district plan? You spent over $400,000 on this integrated water master plan that's going to become obsolete after we turn into an urban water district in a few months. So when we become an urban water district, we will become subject to the state of California mandates and restrictions, including 20% reduction in usage. So have you included this reduction in your study? Or why are you going to have to do another study and pay another over $400,000 for that study? It just doesn't make sense that you're not doing an urban water district study.
So I'm going to field that one for an answer. And the short answer is that the board looked at both alternatives and originally received a proposal from the consultants to do the full urban plan. The cost factor was such that the board of directors wasn't comfortable proceeding in that manner since we weren't at that level. If you look at the story map on the website, that's addressed. And what the consultants have told us is that they would have to go back and redo update information when we hit that threshold, even if we did the urban plan now. And that, and correct me if I mistake here, but it'll be easier for them with the integrated water master plan completed to do the updates when we actually reach that threshold. So it was an economic decision. It was an economic decision made by the board to answer your original question. The timing, it was presented to the board and it was approved by a majority. Pardon me? Is there something else to address? I don't see anybody else coming up to speak. I truly appreciate the large showing tonight. It was mentioned earlier that some of us really advocated strongly to provide this series of town hall meetings. And we appreciate those of you taking advantage of it. Please be safe going home. Thank you very much. Good evening.